During the Great Depression, Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow captured the nation's attention with their daring robberies, murders, and escapes from the law. Their crime spree spanned several states, leaving a trail of destruction and terror in their wake. Their story turned out to be a modern-day love on the run story with the standard Romeo and Juliet ending. But who were Bonnie and Clyde? What led them down this path of crime, and how did they evade the law for so long? In this episode, we're going to try to explore their notorious exploits, examine their humble beginnings, and analyze the cultural impact of their legend that still resonates today. So buckle up as we delve into the dark world of Bonnie and Clyde. And don't boo-hoo, we wouldn't want your mascara to run.
It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive!
I was with you.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Welcome back to another edition of the Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants podcast. Right here is where you get all your gore and all the good shit. Gore. Lots of gore. Maybe not so much today, but whose fucking idea was it to do this, by the way?
Lindy. It's her fault.
Lindy?
It's absolutely all Lindy's fault.
Well,
I'll take it.
And you know what? I'll take it too, because it's not nearly as gruesome as some of the shit we've covered in the last couple of weeks, but okay. I'm down with it. How's everybody doing? Lindy, you doing all right?
Mm-hmm.
Matt, you doing all right?
I'm almost awake.
You're almost awake?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was almost asleep, so.
I think we're right there.
I guess I'm the yin and you're the yang there, buddy.
I had lunch. Oh.
I had 4 hours of sleep in 4 days, so I'm doing my best. Well,
I've been up for 14 hours, so.
Yep, that'll happen. I need me some of that blue that I've heard about. Once that's the stuff that gets you going, right? It's better than Red Bull, is what I hear.
I wouldn't know anything about that. Jesus Christ, Matt. started out on somas, and it's apparently that's the gateway drug right there.
Well, I took somas to go to sleep. Now I need me some blow, and probably a hooker of some sort. Sorry, all sex right, worker. Done. Is that whatever?
Yeah, working girl. The ones that work hard for their money.
I just need her around to make sure I did everything right before I fall asleep, so I didn't leave like the doors unlocked or anything. So, lock it up as you leave.
Well, I think we have so much shit to talk about, we're going to probably just split this up. So today we're going to talk about the humble beginnings of Miss Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow. So Lindy, I'll spit it out in a minute. Without further ado, tell us all about Miss Bonnie Elizabeth Parker.
Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was born on October 1st, 1910 in Rowena, Texas. She was the second of three children born to Charles and Emma Parker. Emma Parker was a brag and a show-off. Her husband Charles was a bricklayer instead of the ordinary farmer of those days. So she felt that her family was at the top of the social ladder. Emma would brag about her children, and when Bonnie was born, Emma would gush about how Bonnie was such a beautiful baby with cotton-colored curls, the bluest eyes you ever saw, and an impudent little red mouth. Bonnie was pushed by her mother into being the center of attention constantly, and it didn't take Bonnie long to love being there. At three, during a platform performance for the church, where children would take turns singing their favorite hymns to the congregation, Bonnie instead belted out the honky-tonk tune, "He's a Devil in His Own Hometown" by Bill Murray.
that's a toe-tapper. I listened to it.
Yeah. That is... That's funny shit. But yeah, she was spoiled rotten from the get-go, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's cute.
Yeah, everybody always said, she's just so cute.
She's cute as a button. Just look at her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a looker. Mm-hmm. That one out there is going to be trouble.
And by God, she was. You damn right.
So in December of 1914, Charles died unexpectedly. So Emma left Rowena with her three small children and headed east to her parents' home in Cement City.
Cement City.
Cement City.
Sorry.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. Emma was able to find work as a seamstress, and while she was at work, Emma's mother would care for the children, and Bonnie kept the house in a stew from morning until night. She would light fires so she could see the pretty flames, She would raid her grandfather's wine stash.
What? Yeah. She was getting into the wine, and she was pretending she was Beavis, huh? Fire! Fire! Holy shit.
She was between 4 and 5 at this point. So
she's a hellion.
She's already a hellion.
Wow.
Bonnie could care less about consequences or punishment.
Well, that
when she
that worked out well for her, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Paved the way for her entire life.
Yeah.
When Bonnie started to attend elementary school, she would play featured roles in pageants. She always did things to make herself stand out in public. During one of her pageants, the students were performing in blackface. They were playing pickaninnies. And the stocking that Bonnie would wear to cover her curls was pulled off of her head. The audience started laughing, and that caused Bonnie to start crying.
Uh-oh.
She must not have been wearing the proper makeup because her makeup started to smear.
She didn't have on her Maybelline? Is that what you're saying?
Did she boohoo and her Maybelline went everywhere?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Boohoo.
But that made the audience laugh harder. So she felt humiliated. And then out of nowhere, she just started doing cartwheels and somersaults. The audience loved it. And she was back to being center stage, but on her own terms now.
Fucking showstopper. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was like, I'll show you bitches. I'll show you what's up. That's crazy.
Bonnie had a short fuse, and she would fight boys or girls over small things like a sideways look in her direction.
Mm-hmm.
She always made sure that she was someone's girlfriend because she loved the attention and the gifts of candy and gum from the boys. Bonnie and her sister Billie Jean would get sent out to fish. It was their way of helping to put food on the table.
And I didn't know. But, I didn't know if you guys knew it, but the Michael Jackson song is actually about her sister.
What? You mean Billie Jean?
Yeah. Now you're catching up. There we go. Come on, guys.
Yeah, sorry.
I just woke up. I thought you guys were going to be on the ball here.
Oh.
And that's not true. I can't back that up, but I just thought I'd say it.
Bonnie would never do the fishing. She would stand there and she would sing at the top of her lungs for Billie Jean and the fish to hear. When Billie Jean would tell her to knock it off and, you know, like, do your part, she'd
chime in and be like, well, yeah, you know what? Someday you're going to be real mad because I'm going to be on Broadway and I'm not going to give you no tickets. How about
Bonnie, you best get over here and help her. I'm going to moonwalk my ass on out of this motherfucker.
I'm not sure if they talk like that, Matt, but, you know.
Oh, sure? Bonnie had a potty mouth, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Like most girls, as Bonnie got older, she became obsessed with fashion and makeup.
Now, makeup was like a new thing, though, right? Like, makeup was brand new.
Yeah, it was. They had just barely started using it in movies, and it had just become available for, like, public use. When she was 15, she was able to get enough money together, and she posed for a glamour photo shoot. Her classic dead-eye stare at the camera.
Yeah, chin up and duck face.
The class, that was the beginning of the duck face.
Mm-hmm. Is that what Bonnie started it? So, that's where it comes from.
Bonnie had big dreams. She wanted to sing in Broadway musicals, act in Hollywood, write best-selling poetry novels, and to find a happy ever after love story. Still just 15, Bonnie decided to set out looking for her romance, and she met Roy Thornton at their high school. He was a good-looking, well-dressed, fun guy, and he had money to pay for dates.
He's so handsome.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got money. Mm-hmm.
He did have a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was said that his money was ill-gotten, but Bonnie didn't care how he got it, just that he had it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That never goes away.
She sounds more like an actress as we go along. I mean,
that's what
like,
she wanted to be, dude.
Yeah, I know. It's obvious by the way she's acting.
Acting.
So she dropped out and she went and got a tattoo on her right inner thigh of two hearts connected by arrows with Bonnie in one heart and Roy in the other.
Mm-hmm.
She was a rebel.
Yep.
Rebel with a bad tattoo.
Yeah, it does sound terrible.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what the tattoos looked like back then, where, or whoever she got it from. It was probably less than a prison job kind of deal.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure. And that, in case nobody else has tattoos there, that's a terrible spot to get a tattoo.
Yeah.
It is.
Why the fuck would you?
Extremely painful.
Why would you even get a fucking tattoo there?
Well, because I wanted it there.
Because I wanted it.
Because just the outside of the thigh wasn't enough room.
Okay. Okay.
I retract my last statement.
Jeez.
She got a mural and needed some more space.
Gotcha.
On September 25th, 1926, Roy and Bonnie married. She was just shy of 16. Mm. The couple found a place near Bonnie's mother, and their marriage went sour really quick. Roy was paying bills with money he had obtained mysteriously, and Bonnie would get furious that he wasn't including her in his plans or telling her what he had done. Mm. Bonnie also couldn't stand to be away from her mother, so she made Roy take her there every single day.
How's the honeymoon going, buddy? I bet he was the one going a boo-hoo with his Maybelline running.
Run away.
Yeah,
Roy.
So.
Jesus. Every day.
Every day. Mm-mm. So feeling bad for Roy because she knew her daughter could be a handful, Emma just asked the couple if they would move in with her. She thought that might ease the fighting and it would help Bonnie because she would just be there.
Yeah.
So they did move in with Emma, and Bonnie all of a sudden became obsessed with having a baby. But due to a gynecological issue and a botched medical procedure, Bonnie was not able to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
And then in August of 1927, Roy disappeared for 10 days. Upon his return, he gave no explanation for his disappearance, and he also started drinking heavily. When Bonnie started to criticize him for it, he started to beat her.
Because I had to tell her twice, woman.
Mm-hmm.
Different times.
Different times. Yeah, that was acceptable.
Yeah, 15.
Stick no wider than
almost
your thumb,
16,
right?
Married.
The rule of thumb.
Yeah.
From the Boondock Saints. He's like, well, that's not very big. Shouldn't it be the rule of wrist? What freaking
In October, Roy disappeared for 19 days. And in December, he just simply took off.
Wow.
Bonnie believed that he had left her for another woman.
Probably one that wasn't so clingy with her mother.
Probably.
I guess.
So Bonnie started to keep a diary on January 1st of 1928. It detailed that she was looking for work, had begun casual dating, hanging out with girlfriends at the movies, and how upset she was with her situation with Roy. She continuously asked the diary, why don't something happen? Her last entry into the diary was January 16th. She had been able to find work at Hargrave's Cafe as a waitress. It is also widely believed that she was a sex worker from the things that Bonnie had stated herself, like, you think I can dress this way off tips alone, and from customers at the cafe who became regulars once she started working there.
Yeah, I'd read that in a couple spots, and then I didn't know if it was true or not, but then finding out that, well, she's not able to become pregnant anyway, that's like premium pass into that lifestyle.
Easy money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just commerce. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Roy returned a year later in January of 1929, but Bonnie stuck to her guns and she refused to take him back. A few months later, Roy was picked up for robbery and sentenced to 5 years in prison. And Bonnie never saw him again, and she never wrote to him, but she also never filed for divorce, and she never took off his ring.
That was because she felt bad for him in a way, I think, right? And mm-hmm.
She said she didn't want to kick him while he was down.
Right, right. So she just told her mom she wasn't going to get a divorce while he was in prison.
Maybe if she's wearing the ring, less people are fucking with her. Like, less dudes are giving her, you know, shit. Maybe they see that.
They're possibility.
Like,
possibly.
Yeah.
So in 1929, she changed jobs and she went to Marcos in Dallas. And her boss often threatened to fire her because she would give away food to people who couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
He was going to fire her for feeding people who couldn't eat. The last episode, yeah. One of the last episodes we did, this dude wrecked 6 fucking trucks and they don't fire him. That's wild.
Yeah.
While she was working at Marcos, she met Ted Hinton, who later became a Dallas County deputy and imperative to the story. Bonnie, well, the Marcos crashed after the stock market crash had hit Dallas. Yeah. It hit Dallas in November 1929, and it caused Marcos to close its doors. Yeah. Bonnie was unable to find work, so she started to hire herself out as a babysitter and a housekeeper, and she hated it. In 1930, Bonnie went to her brother Buster's house for a party, and a handsome stranger caught Bonnie's eye. From the moment they met, Clyde and Bonnie filled each other's needs. He was assertive, well-dressed, and had a fancy car.
Mm-hmm.
Being with him was fun, and she fell in love instantly. And for... For Clyde, Bonnie was tiny, well-dressed, clingy, and she matched his determination to rise out of poverty.
Tiny? She was only 5 inches shorter than him. Wasn't he 5'5 or 5'7, something like that? He was.
I thought it was 5'4? 5'5?
Yeah, I think he was 5'4.
Okay, so she was.
Yeah. And like the heaviest he ever got was like 130 pounds.
Yeah, like I can curl him. And yeah. Bonnie's like not even 5 foot tall, so it's like they complement yeah. mm-hmm. each other pretty well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clyde liked to be able to engulf her, basically, and he could do that. So he could hide her in front of him.
Yeah.
You couldn't see her. Yeah. She was standing there because of her height,
right.
her weight. The two were inseparable right from the beginning. So Bonnie's mother said, as crazy as Bonnie had once been about Roy, she never worshipped him like she did Clyde.
Oh, Clyde, you're such a gentleman.
Oh. In early February, Clyde came to inform Bonnie that he had to go out of town the next day for a little while for work. And when they took an extreme amount of time to say goodbye, Emma just invited Clyde to stay over. It wasn't
and this was
really an invitation, but that's kind of how he took it.
Wasn't this within like basically 2 weeks of them meeting? So like it was just like boom, it was instantaneous, like mm-hmm. gasoline on the fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So he slept on the couch, of course. And the next morning, Clyde answered the front door when Dallas police knocked, and he was taken into custody. Bonnie went into hysterics and vowed to her mother that her love would save him. They wrote often. I was waiting to see if I could get past
love
that
can
part.
Build a bridge by the judge just fucking popped in my head for some was
this,
reason.
Was this for stealing chickens or cars this time?
we'll get into that in a minute. Okay. We'll get into that.
They wrote often, and in one letter, Bonnie had informed Clyde that she had gone against his wishes and without his permission to meet his family. Bonnie traveled with Clyde's mother, Kumi, by train to Clyde's court proceedings in Waco. After the proceedings, Kumi went home, but Bonnie had a cousin who lived close by, so she stayed to be close to Clyde. Clyde was able to persuade Bonnie to help him break out, and then they could be together without the bars between them.
I'm glad I watched a documentary on this to find out Clyde's mom's name, Kumi, because when I read it, that's you not the way Cummy? I would have said it. I've seen it. I was like, okay.
What?
I know that's pronounced, but now I know how that's spelled. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Bonnie had finally found her ultimate romance, her chance at an exciting life, a way to get her name in lights, and this was to be her starring role.
Role of a lifetime. The only role.
The only role.
She's never going to die. I mean, they'll be talking about Bonnie that'll never end.
Forever.
Yeah.
And they definitely became infamous and timeless.
Yeah.
So the romanticized image that has blown up since.
You mean like
their time?
You mean like through films like Bonnie and Clyde and Natural Born Killers and True Romance and yeah, mm-hmm. it's just mm-hmm. yeah.
Crazy Romeo Woody Juliet. Harrelson was in two of them.
Yep.
Yes.
Both sides Woody. Of it there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's you're right. It's not going anywhere.
Mm.
Romeo and Juliet with bullets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and they were lousy for the most part at what they did. I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, we'll get into it, but
we will.
Yes.
Well, if you guys have no objections, I'd like to give you a little background on Clyde. That's all right.
Get after it, buddy.
Please do.
All right. Because we got to get through this shit because we're like already. Yeah, we've got to try to get this down to 2 hours. That's my goal.
Two episodes in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck. I'm gonna drag out these crimes like a motherfucker.
There's so many fucking crimes. Yeah.
I'm talking about every bullet.
Well, as Lindy has so told us, we're talking like 1900s. We're talking Depression era. So not a great time to be growing up. I think if Clyde was born in a different time, in a different place, he probably would have been a mechanic, a musician, maybe even a race car driver.
Well, he was good at both of those. He was good at all three of those things you just mentioned.
All three of those really things. Yeah.
But he wasn't any of those things professionally. He was born on March 24th in 1909. Some people say 1910 because that's what his mother had written in the family Bible, but most people go by the 1909. He was born in Tellico, Texas, which is about 40 miles southeast of Dallas. It's about 20 miles south of my house. He was the fifth of seven children born to Henry and Kumi Barrow. They were poor farmers. From oldest to youngest, there was Elvin, who went by Jack, followed by sister Artie, then followed by Marvin, who went by Buck, then followed by older sister Nell. Yeah, that's what I heard. And then we had Clyde, and then we had LC after that, and young Marie. Now, the Barrows were God-fearing people. They're a hard-working family. Clyde's mom, Kumi, she was a super strict disciplinarian, and she made sure they attended church and school as often as possible. So, you know, as long as they got their chores done, she'd send them to school. She brought all their kids up to live their lives by the Bible, just like she did, and she ingrained in them the belief that poor people were the good ones and rich people were bad. That probably tied into a lot of shit later on for Clyde and at least one of his other brothers. They were fucking dirt poor people, like literally. They had dirt floor in their house that they lived in. The kids slept on pallets in this little three-room shack that they lived in, and their lives literally revolved around work and chores on the farm.
Sleeping on a fucking pallet. There's like rats running through your bedroom, and however hot it is outside, it's hotter inside. With at least
probably two fucking siblings on the same pallet with you. Yeah, so it's got to be hotter than balls.
And then in the winter, even you're just like thankful it's cool at least. Maybe you can catch some sleep before a rat gnaws on your face. Yeah. Sorry, I can't help it.
We're going to catch that rat. We're going to cook it. That's what we're going to do.
I'm going to eat that son of a bitch.
Rat stew. Woo! But they barely had enough food to feed their kids and the family. You know, they scraped by barely, like, even, you know, during World War One, when cotton prices were really high, they barely scraped by. So, you know, if the crop was really bad, which it was most of the time, they really struggled. Throughout his youth, Clyde was nicknamed Bud, a shortened version of Buddy, by the family members. He was rarely referred to by his real name. He would order his younger brother and sister around, and even some of his older ones, and he'd pretend to be outlaws like Jesse James and his favorite, Billy the Kid. He thought of both of them as folk heroes, and they were thought of that as the time, you know, they'd sneak down to the movies if they could scrape together the 3 cents to get in, and they'd walk the 3 miles to town and go watch the way, just pew, pew, Western, and they just idolized him. When his sisters or his brother would ask to be one of the other, you know, they wanted to be Jesse James or Billy the Kid, he'd always argue with them, or he'd just simply stop playing with them. He would just like fucking pout and walk away. He's like, fuck you. I get to be the bad guy.
I'm Billy the Kid or I'm nothing.
God damn right. Although he was a good boy by his mother's account, he did get into trouble occasionally. One of the local store owners caught him taking candy from a jar in the store. And rather than punish him, he required Clyde to whistle every time he was in the store to make sure he hadn't taken any more candy. So it's like, if I know the kid's whistling, I know he's like, he ain't got no fucking candy in his mouth, exactly. So he's stealing.
Whistle the whole time you're here, you son of a bitch. Yep. On to you.
Brilliant.
Yep. All right, so just like Bonnie, Clyde loved to dance and sing. And his mother said that he liked music better than anything. He learned to play their old family guitar. And he would eventually learn to play the saxophone as well by one of his brother-in-laws. His mother always said that his first ambition was to be in a band with some other boys. Just wanted to be in a band with some other boys. Now, all the children in the Barrow family, they'll learn how to handle guns because, you know, they lived on a farm. Every once in a while, you got to put an animal down. You got to protect the livestock. But
plus, it's fun to go out and do. I'm assuming they just went out to have fun. Like, I can shoot better than you. We'll set these targets up. And...
Yep. Yeah. Now, Clyde was a pretty good shot, but he didn't care for hunting. He said his love of animals prevented him from wanting to go out and do that. So he preferred to just shoot at targets.
Nope.
That was his jam.
I get that.
Now, he really looked up to his older brother, Buck, and his older brother had always been kind of a troublemaker, even from an early age. He always skipped school and missed church regularly, and no amount of discipline from his mom, Kumi, could keep him on the right path. Like, I think that Buck basically got through like a third grade education, and that's all he ever got. So, much like his father, I don't think he could even read or write.
But I think he could rebuild a motor in like 4 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
but that,
you know, like tear a car apart, put it right back together kind of thing. So,
or steal one. Yeah.
Oh, he could definitely steal. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That works too.
Yeah. Now, Clyde saw his brother, you know, kind of stand up to his mom, and he thought that was pretty badass. That's pretty cool. So he kind of followed, he would eventually follow in his brother's footsteps. And that's not a good thing for little Clyde there. He got older, he got a little taller, and as he got taller, his temper grew shorter, and he started getting into fights with local kids pretty consistently. And as the other children grew up, they started moving away from the farm one by one. First, the oldest son, Jack, married a local girl, moved to Dallas, and he started working on as a car mechanic from the back of his home. And then not shortly after that, his two older sisters, Artie and Nell, they both relocated to Dallas, both to work as hairdressers. And then Buck, who liked to party, followed them soon after, just because he was just like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
But he can blame him.
Yeah. And because they didn't have enough help on the farm, and because of poor crops, this farm that they didn't even own, they leased it. They decided, Harold and Kumi, that they're both in their late 40s. They said, fuck this. And they took the remaining kids, scraped all the shit that they owned, which was very little. And they packed up the farm in 1922 and put it in their little wagon and hitched a horse and headed off to Dallas. So there, at this point, there's only three children living with them at this point. There was 4-year-old Marie. Elsie was 9, and then Clyde was 12 at this time. Now,
basically, in Dallas, at that time, getting damn close to it.
Well, yeah, he thought so anyway. Now, at this time in Dallas, all these farmers that were moving in because of, you know, they couldn't make any money, so they wanted to relocate to Dallas and, you know, hopes moving in the big city and try to strike it rich, get a new job. But everybody, all the Dallas people, they were like, fuck y'all, you stay the fuck out of here. They kind of, you know, looked at them like the scum of the fucking earth.
Yeah.
So they basically lived in West Dallas in shanties, like in an area down by the river, the Trinity River, on the west side of Dallas, and basically just fucking mud right there by the river.
West Dallas wasn't like a glamorous place to live at this time, was it?
There's still some not great spots.
I assume there was.
Yeah.
Was it Concrete City? Was it? They weren't even in there.
Cement City?
No.
Cement City, yeah. Not even there, yeah.
They were in the bog, right? Or some shit.
Yep, yeah, the bog. What do they call it? Devil's something. I can't remember.
The Devil's Ball Sack. We'll just make it up.
I love it. Let's call it. That's how I recollect it. So they stayed in their wagon for a while, and they basically lived off handouts from the Salvation Army.
It's the Devil's Back Porch.
There it is. Yes. The Devil's Back Porch. I wanted, for some reason, the Marvel character, the devil. What's the blind guy? He was in my head.
Oh, Daredevil.
Daredevil. Yeah. There you go. That's why. The Devil's Back Porch. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I'm distracting myself. So Henry starts collecting all this scrap And he eventually gets enough money saved up from finding all his scrap that he buys a shack. And also Harold or Henry and Kumi would also go work as migrant workers on all these farms surrounding Dallas. And when they did that, they would send the remaining children either to his older sister, to Clyde's older sister's Nell's house, or they would send them to his uncle's house to work at a farm there. And at the same time, the children all still try to attend school whenever possible. So that's where his sister Nell, that's her husband, is the one that taught Clyde how to play the saxophone. That's where he probably bugged the fuck out of a bunch of people while he did try to learn how to do that.
I wonder what. I get the guitar back then. I wonder why you wanted to learn saxophone so much.
Jazz? Really? Or just like, no, I don't know if it'd be jazz. It might be like big band shit. We're talking the 20s.
That's true. Yeah.
So, Glenn Miller shit. So, when he's 15 years old, he runs off from camp with some boys to the city, and bright lights, big city, you know? Pretty women, sharp dressed men. And he's like, fuck yeah, sign me up. Not long after, he drops out of school at the age of 16. And he's like, I'm going to be in a band. I'm going to be a musician. And
didn't we all?
Yeah.
For a lot of us.
Didn't we all? Yeah. He ends up getting a job for the Brown Cracker and Candy Company, making $1 a day.
Brown Cracker and Candy? Brown cracker sounds tasty. I gotta tell you, that does sound pretty fucking awful.
Yeah, not my favorite. So from there, he decides he's not making enough money, and he moves on to Procter & Gamble. And same deal, still not making enough money. So finally, he goes to the United States Glass Company. And even though he, you know, by the end of all this, he's making what's equivalent to like minimum wage today, it still wasn't enough to afford the lifestyle he wanted to live.
So he was making the equivalent of $15 an hour?
Minimum wage, like for a minor, like think of like $4.25 or whatever.
Waiter type. Okay.
Yeah. So because he still, you know, wants to live that good life, he starts hanging out with his older brother and, Buck takes him along, and Buck has this thing, you know, he's really into cockfighting, chicken fights. But the thing is he's got no chickens. So they just start stealing some. So he starts, it's the gateway robbery. It's a gateway theft thing right there. So it starts
to throw just a regular chicken into a chicken fight. I don't know what's going on until his face is ripped off by the other chicken.
So he's hanging out with Buck. They start stealing chickens from backyards and selling them. And soon after that, he has his first brush with the law. And although he's not arrested, he was severely reprimanded. I think they probably beat the fuck out of him. He's like, what the fuck are you doing, kid? You know, he's too young to put him in in the cell. So
no, that was like your punishment back then. We'll just beat the shit out of you for a minute and then we're gonna go about our day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now around the same time, Clyde falls for this girl named Eleanor B. Williams. And like he starts telling people like that's gonna be my wife right there. And he likes her so much that he gets her initials tattooed on his left forearm. EBW.
Just like Bonnie. Right at it.
Yep.
Love you. I gotta get your name put in me in ink.
So I don't forget.
It's the most genius idea.
Yeah. So in 1926, they get into this huge argument and she leaves to visit some relatives in East Texas. And Clyde is so upset that he rents a car and he invites Eleanor's mother along with him and he goes and tries to patch things up. But soon after they arrive, the local sheriff shows up. It seems that by driving this car out of town, Clyde had broken the car rental agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than come out and face the sheriff, he hid from him and he fled and he leaves Eleanor, her mother, and the car behind. So that relationship is done right there. Yeah, that puts a pin in it, you know?
Damn.
That's a quick way to end something.
Damn, I miss her, but there's no way I'm going back.
So soon after he gets back to Dallas, he's arrested, but the car rental company drops the charges since there's no damage to the vehicle, and they release him.
He was a hell of a driver, if nothing else. I mean, really.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But now he's got a mugshot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And just 3 weeks after this happens, he gets caught again with his brother Buck, and this time they've moved up to turkeys. They're
stepping their in a poultry truck green full of game stolen. Up.
Yep. Yep. And Buck takes the blame for all of it, and Clyde is released yet again. But now,
the whole truck of turkeys.
I want to know what month it was. What month was it that they got busted with the turkeys? Was it right before November? Because I'm guessing it's like, hey, you know what's going to pay.
Wait, fucking turkeys, man.
Fuck these chickens. Yep. Let's get some turkeys because Thanksgiving's coming. Let's get these some bitches.
So now you got Buck and Clyde, and they're on the cops' radar. You know, the Barra boys, anytime something happens, we know where to go look. So anytime theft occurred, cops come looking for them, drag them downtown for questioning. If they had thought they had anything to do with it, or even if they didn't, they would just drag them downtown and be like, hey, we know you know who did this, you know.
And that'll come up later, too. I mean, if they would have left him the fuck alone, probably.
But. Yeah. So the harassment only just basically poured fuel on the fire. And Clyde just grew to hate the cops more and more and more, and authority in general, day by day. All right? So at this point, Clyde realizes, you know, if I'm going to get caught stealing something, maybe poultry's not the way to go. So he ups his game. He ups his game a little bit, and he steps it up to car theft, burglary, and safe cracking. He thinks that's the way to go.
I don't know how good he was at safe cracking, but he was a motherfucking
great. He fucking sucked at it.
Great car theft guy.
Hey, if you ain't first, you're last. Now, around this time, cars were becoming really popular, especially in Dallas. I think 4 out of 5 families owned a car at this point. That's because they were being offered on payment plans. Most people left the keys in them, and he could steal a car, repaint it, and sell it for $100. And that's a lot of money.
And he could also hotwire a car in like 5 seconds or some shit like that. It was like so easy. Like he knew how to do it. And he could just get up there, hit it, get in, go. It's not like those old crank cars or whatever anymore. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So before long, Clyde's dressed in sharp. And he's got a long line of women just all sitting there waiting to date him. And along the way, he also gets the names Annie and Grace added to his tattoo collection, as well as another face of a girl he dated and then a Navy tattoo, because I think he tried to join the Navy at some point, but he couldn't get in because of some childhood illness he had. But he's like, well, fuck it. If I got the Navy tattoo, maybe I'll pick up more chicks.
This guy, would he fall in love with every girl he met the second he met him? And this is like,
I guess, man.
It's like, I met her last night. I think she's the love of my life. Can you tattoo her right below this 14th girl that I met?
Maybe every girl that showed him those boobies.
Oh, just like, this boobies. Can you tattoo her name on Just do it. We're going to be together forever. Now, I swear to God.
Now, because of the constant attention from the Dallas Police Department, Clyde thought it was a better idea to start stealing cars out of town. You know, he's like, I can dodge all the cops. And, you know, for the most part, you're not going to be able to find any evidence to charge him. So he pairs up with this guy named Frank Claus and his brother, Buck. And they just start getting a little more daring day by day. In 1929, they were arrested on suspicion to rob a lumberyard, but due to lack of evidence, they got away with it. Later that year, on November 29th, their luck ran out, however, when Clyde Buck and another guy named Sidney Moore drove up to the small town of Henrietta in a stolen car. After they abandoned the car and swapped it for a faster one, a V6 Ford, they broke into a home, found only a small take. So they were like, well, fuck, that's not enough. So on their way back to Dallas, they proceed to break into a garage in Denton, which is about, I don't know, 20 miles north of Dallas. And they find a safe, but they can't open it. So these dipshits decide, well, fuck, let's just throw it in the car. We'll get it open later. So as they're leaving, they're passed by a local patrol car. Yeah, and a car chase ensues. Now, Clyde's driving the car, and he managed to hit a curb, break the car's axle, and so the three men have to take off on foot.
Yeah, how much did that Safeway that was in the back, though? I'm assuming that really helped break the axle.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying, yeah. Dipshits. So the cops start shooting at him. Buck, his brother Buck, gets hit in the leg. And then the Moore fella, he surrenders not soon. He really soon after that. But Clyde, once again, manages to slip away. He keeps running. He eventually hits a ride back to Dallas. Now, his brother Buck and Moore, they were both sentenced to 4 years in prison. Now, this other guy that he hung out with named Frank Claus, who was not a great guy, he decided he was going to stop hanging around Frank. But despite this and his brother's incarceration, he just kept right on fucking stealing cars. Because he was making fucking buku bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 1930, one of Clyde's friends invites him to a house party in West Dallas. And it is here that Clyde meets a young Bonnie Parker. And as Lindy had told us earlier, these two hit it off immediately. And within 2 weeks, they're fucking head over heels and Clyde gets erect. He gets arrested and convicted.
He did get erected,
of,
though. I mean,
erected? Yeah. I'm leaving it in. Fuck it.
You fucking better. Right after they meet, so, he gets erect.
Yeah. So he's in jail, and he gets shipped down to Waco, right? And before he's basically sentenced to, was it like six counts?
Seven two-year terms.
7 2-year terms. I thought it was six.
But okay. Congruent, so it's only 2 years. It is only going to be 2 years.
Right. Yeah. The judge is going to be lenient on him because, you know, he's young. And he's like, you guys, you need to stop this shit.
Yep.
You're gonna end up killing somebody and then you're going to end up in the electric chair. So 2 years. He could have just fucking done his 2 years, but nah. He comes up with a plan with these dipshits he's in fucking jail with. And one of these guys is
actually,
he's in the
Buck escaped the same prison before he got there.
He just went back home.
Yeah. He escaped with another inmate and they basically just walked out, got in a guard's car and drove away. How easy was it to escape a prison back then? That's what they did.
So Clyde was like, well, fuck, if Buck can do it, I can do it. I guess.
Yeah. So it was Clyde and William Turner. That's the dude that he met. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And then was it Turner's? Turner was the one that said, hey, I know where we can get a gun, but I don't want to have my family get involved because I don't want to get them in trouble.
Yeah. So, he had a gun stashed at his house and Bonnie was coming to visit every day anyway.
So he writes a map trying to show where this house is at. And, you know, he says, you know, wherever the gun's supposed to be.
Yep.
So at the bottom of this note, Clyde writes something along the lines of, you're the sweetest baby ever, and hands it to Bonnie. And Bonnie goes with her cousin. They go to this house.
Mm-hmm.
Her cousin gets all fucking freaked out. They ransack this house because the gun's not where it's supposed to be. I think it ends up being in like underneath a window seat. And so she brings the gun back. She like just puts it between her breasts and buckles it in. She knows she's probably not going to get frisked there.
She wore two belts.
Yeah, but that's how she held the gun.
Is that where she put it in between her boobs? Okay.
Yeah. And so she gets the gun to Clyde. And
which, not sure if you guys have seen Bonnie, but you know, she wasn't
stacked.
No,
she wasn't stacked, so it would have looked like she had a third boob, and I'm pretty sure the gun was bigger. How the hell she got away with that, I'll never know.
Because everybody loved her, apparently. Right? She was like, she's so charming, and she must have had some kind of personality. I mean, fucking just, you just fall in love with her. It's like you couldn't stop looking at her eyes, apparently, because you're like, what's your third nipple there, or you know, whatever.
But wait, your eyes are so big.
Oh, we trust you. Go on into the prison.
Go on in there.
For the second time in one day.
Oh, shit. On, holy shit, guys.
It's pretty dumb when you think about it.
Super dumb.
You can't get away with that now. I mean, this.
All right. So on March 11th, 1930, Clyde used his weapon to escape with his cellmates, but they were captured a week later. The reason they were captured is because they were fucking idiots. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Was it Wisconsin? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that they got caught in. Now, these guys drove all the fucking way to Wisconsin.
Clyde Turner and Abernathy. That's right. There's always a third guy that jumps on. It's like Clyde Turner.
If you have all the info on this, yeah. Give me all the details on this.
I don't have all the details on it. But Turner pretended to be sick. That was how they were going to get out. Like, mm-hmm. he had the gun. Yeah. So he's like, I'm gonna be sick. I'm going to throw up. I need some milk. And so the guard was like, I don't want to clean up. Fucking vomit. No, I'm getting some milk. He unlocks it in there. This is like, you dumb bastard. That's how they got out. Clyde so he's got his gun and Clyde hotwired a car and they were gone, and then they just after the first car that he hotwired, I think they didn't go very far before they just found another one. He hotwired that one. They just kept stealing cars as they went.
Yeah. And acquiring plates.
Yes.
And I think they got caught because they got lost. I mean, they hit like a train depot, they hit somebody's house, and like a small shop all in the same night in this town that they were at. But he ended up like driving out in the fucking country to try to get away, and he comes back and loops right around to the same fucking place they just robbed, and the cops are all sitting there.
Yes.
And that's how they got busted.
They weren't smart, buddy. Clyde was a great driver and a good shot, but he was not smart. He was
that's about where it
dumb
ended. Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
They got the nickname the Dumbbell Gang at this point.
Babyface Bandit / Dumbbell Gang. Yep. That sounds right. So they get back to the same prison or the same detention center that they were at in Waco. And they go back in to get sentenced again. This time, Clyde gets the full fucking 14 years. Sentenced to hard labor, and eventually...
Was this for robbing the dry cleaners in Railroad Depot that after they got away with it, Scott Clean? It's just fucking perfect. This we did everything right. They drive, like you said, directly back past it the next day, and the guy's like, hey, man, that's the car.
Yes. Yep, that's it.
Yep. The cops were fucking there when they drove by it. They were like, thanks. Set their donuts and coffee down. Just jump in their cars and drive 13 seconds and pull them over. But they did shoot at them because that helps.
Yep.
That'll help your sentence.
Genius.
That'll help your sentence out.
So, Clyde gets sentenced to 14 years of hard labor. By the same judge that, you know, just basically said, you know, you can serve all your terms at once. He said, well, fuck you. Maybe you need to learn a little fucking lesson here, dipshit. So hard labor, motherfucker, sends him down to Eastham State Farm. And that's not a great place to be, by the way. It's like one of the most notoriously bad prisons ever in the United States.
There's like the wall, and then there's the cotton farm, and the cotton farm's worse. And that's where he got sent for some reason. On his first.
I'm gonna let you take over right there, Matt.
Well, it's also called the Bloody Ham.
Yep.
Eastern Prison's called the Bloody Ham because
it's a smaller portion. Is it Birmingham? Birmingham?
Well, no, that's got nothing to do with where it's located. It's what the inmates would do to get the fuck out of the grueling work that they were put through every day. So they would chop off body parts just to get out of the work that they had to do.
And the guards were all fucking treated him like fucking shit too.
Yeah, he participates in later. So it was April 21st on 1930 that he got sent to the cotton farm. And I don't know why. I mean, he was only, he was 20 years old. Said he was 18.
Said he was
18, but he still got sent there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and trying to be a badass.
The laws had it out for Glad.
They did. They surely did. But
now, he listed his name as Clyde Champion. Champion. Chestnut. Oh, yeah. Because he didn't want to be in fucking prison with a middle name like Chestnut, because who knows what's going to happen.
I know what's going to happen. Chestnut is the least of your worries. He meets Ralph Fultz on the bus, though. They've both got chains around their necks while they're riding this bus. And they become friends. It's like, over this time, it's like those two guys get really close. And, like, this is going to be like the basis for everything that Clyde does. He's like, he wants to get back at this prison, and you'll find out why later. He hates this prison. He hates the guards. Later, he hates other inmates. But his whole goal is, we've got to come back. We've got to break every fucking person out of this prison, and we got to kill all the guards if we have to. So there was a guy named B.B. Monzingo. He was fired for being too cruel to the inmates. Then he was rehired, and that works out well. They started calling it Little Alcatraz, because this dude just would beat the fuck
out of people,
the inmates. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one day, they're going to, okay, fuck that guy. We're getting out of here one day. We're going to save everybody, except for Ed Crowder. They didn't want to save him. That guy was, he was a over 6 foot tall, 200 pound kind of piece of shit. And
he was 6'2".
Was he 6'2"?
Yeah.
6'2", 200 pounds. And Clyde became his punk.
Basically, was it his punk or his bitch?
Both. Yeah. For a year. an entire year of any time Crowder wanted it, he was given it. Yeah.
So he was laying the pipe.
Well, he was laying the pipe first. Well, we'll get to laying pipe here in a second. But yeah, he was definitely laying the pipe.
So, different kind of pipe.
Yeah, different kind of pipe. He was laying the flesh pipe. We're going to get a lead one here in a second. Aubrey Scaly. He hated fucking Ed, and he was in for life too, just like Ed was. And he was right up there. See, the guards there would, like, if you were on a life sentence, you had no fucking chance of getting out. They would give you, like, jobs that you could do, like hold this guy down or beat this guy, and allow you to do it because they were, like, too fucking lazy, apparently.
Yeah.
But Aubrey hated fucking Ed, and I told Clyde if he killed him, that he would take the rap, because he was in there for life anyway. He didn't care. He's like, fuck it.
Yeah, he wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah. So what Clyde does on October 29th, 1931, is hides a lead pipe in his pants. Apparently, he was stacked anyway.
Is that a lead pipe in your pants, or are you just happy to see me?
There you go. Have you not seen Bonnie in a long time? I mean, fuck's sake, dude. He hides in his pants, and he walks into the shower. Now, what I'm picturing is, like, Bugs Bunny, when he's, like, dressed up as female bunny, and he just walks into the shower, like, trying to lead him in. Boy, it fucking worked. Because that fucker walked in there. He just crushed his fucking skull. Now, the reason why I'm laughing is because he raped him for a fucking year.
Yeah. So well-deserved.
He crushed his skull, but then Scaly jumped out and just started stabbing the motherfucker. So Scaly told him, he's like, hey, it was a knife fight and he lost it.
Yep. And he gave himself a couple superficial cuts just to, back to make the story.
But must have seemed like he lost, like he was standing when he lost it and then fell down and just destroyed his skull, maybe. But they didn't, these guys didn't fucking care in the first place. Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
It's like, hey, one less dickhead.
Not really going to investigate the death of a murderer. Nope.
Not really.
No, they didn't give a rat's ass in the first place.
And that's the first person Clyde ever killed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that, the only one that I think's justified. Probably. I get that one. But at this point, Buck and Blanche are married because, you know, he got out.
Yeah. But then they convince him he should probably go serve the rest of his...
After they got married, Blanche and his mom talked him into turning himself back in, which is so weird because he turns himself in. They don't add extra time to his sentence. They don't send him over to the bad part where Clyde was. They're just like, here's your room. We left it exactly how you had it. There's your stuff on the wall and all your books and whatever. It's just like, go on in.
Yeah.
No time added. It's so fucking weird.
Maybe it's because he turned himself in.
The judge must have had a good day.
Yep.
Well, here's a good day for Clyde, because he's fucking sick and tired of this fucking place. So on January 27th of 1932, he had another inmate, and we don't know who it is, chop his big toe off. And it actually chopped off part of the other toe. I was like, I'd have went from the pinky end, but he was just going from the big toe end.
He's like, fuck it, yeah.
Which is...
Well, you had to be able to... You had to be damaged enough to not be able to be sent back.
Right, that's... Yeah.
So your pinky won't throw off your balance, but your big toe will.
Yeah, because he had a limp for the rest of his life, even though...
Yep, he sure did.
After he had somebody cut it off, 6 days later, his mother got him pardoned, and he was relieved with a limp. Yeah.
And no toe.
Yeah. And he said, after this, he's like, he would rather die than ever go back to prison. He's never going to go back to prison is what he says. And if he goes back to prison, it's going to be to break people out. So he does try to go straight after this. Like he does try to get like a mechanic job, like his mom and dad, they've got that deal. Yeah. They got going. He wants to get a mechanic job, but cops keep showing up constantly. It's like every job he has, anytime there's a lead on something, like there's something that's happened, they blame it on him because he's been convicted of shit. So,
well, and they would just show up and take him from work for hours.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't get paid for that day anyway because he wasn't there. Yeah,
just, and eventually they'd let him go because they didn't want to fucking deal with it.
Yep, just the being employer. Assholes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so
I think at one point wasn't it like he got detained by the cops and then he's walking home. And then he gets fucking picked up again and taken right back.
Most likely, yeah.
That's fucked up.
And they wouldn't give him a ride back, so he spent hours...
Walking.
Walking back to work.
Or borrowing cars. He was really good at borrowing cars. So, August 1931, Fultz actually gets released, and so they're dead set, both of them, they're going to free everybody from that prison. And so Fultz gives it a try just on one dude that he knows, his buddy Ray Hamilton. So he sneaks in a bunch of hacksaw blades in the spines of magazines. And it works.
How's that work? That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it works. So we got Clyde, Fultz, and Hamilton. They're the like first Barrow gang. When Bonnie finds out about it, she's super pissed and she doesn't want anything to do with them. No, that's a lie. She is fucking all in. She cannot wait to be part of this game.
Well, when Clyde got out,
she had a beau, right? She had another boyfriend.
Yeah. She had another boyfriend.
And he comes walking in and she just like, and just kind of pushes the other guy away. And he's just like, what the fuck? Okay, well, that's over.
Yeah, he walked away while they were embraced.
Yeah.
Know your role, buddy.
Like, I'm not needed here anymore.
Know your role.
See you later.
Yep. Well, guys, we should probably wrap it up here. So this is part one of Barney and Clyde, and we'll get a lot bloodier next week.
Super bloody.
Be sure. Bloody and bullet ridden and maybe some brain matter as well.
All kinds of guns.
All kinds of guns and cars.
Car chases and Tommy guns and... Well, actually, they didn't really use the Tommy guns.
BARs. And, yeah, they did. Yeah,
they used Tommy guns too, but it wasn't the
weapon of choice.
And I can't wait to get to Dupo, Illinois, because that's my
luck.
Dupo, Illinois is my favorite part of this entire fucking story.
Save it for next week, man. Save it for next week. Guys, thanks for hanging out. Be sure and like, rate, and review the podcast if you like what you're hearing. And you can catch us on the live stream, STS Sessions, every Saturday night on Facebook Live or on YouTube Live. You want to check out merch, you want to hit us up, you got a story you want to tell us, email us at hmfppod.com. Anybody got anything else?
Sounds like you nailed it.
Well, we'll see you back here next Tuesday. Until then, I'm Zach.
Spar.
Lindy.
Later.
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 It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive! I watch with you.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
I trust you.
Like, start again?
Yeah, start. Start. Just start.
Okay.
Again.
Ha ha ha!
And that's the podcast for this week. You guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Oh, do you mean start over? What?